dashing through the snow.
Good-o.
In a one-horse open sleigh.
Good-ay.
O'er the fields we go.
Good-o.
Laughing all the way.
Good-ay. Bells on bobtail ring, making our spirit.
Joining us now is someone who is recognized as the best entertainer in the world, winning such awards as Best Show, Best All-Around Performer, Best Impersonator, and Best Overall Show by the Best of Las Vegas Awards, and the winner of America's Got Talent Season 2, a man who keeps people smiling, laughing, and entertain an inspiration to all of those who never give up on their dreams, Terry Fader. How are you?
I'm just fantastic, and what a great way to introduce my story. You're so right, because the reason I'm here is because I just wouldn't give up, and I love being the poster boy for that. I really do.
Well, I love that, too. I think that is so important. Not only are you an entertainer, you really paved the way for others to follow your direction. So many people give up on their dreams that it's very sad, but when you love what you do, look at the success you've had after 40 years old. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I defied the odds, and people are always asking me when I do these kinds of interviews, they're always saying, so do you have any advice for other people out there in your situation? And my advice and my answer is the same. I say it's okay to give up on your dreams. It's never okay to stop working toward your dreams. Because I gave up on my dream when I turned 40. I thought, you know, I guess it's not going to happen. You know, I just always figured that I had enough of an ability to entertain that I would get discovered one day. And then when I turned 40, I thought, you know, I'm a 40-year-old ventriloquist. What are the odds? You know, that a ventriloquist who's 40 is ever going to get any kind of attention at all. But what I did was, instead of focusing on trying to reach those goals and dreams, I decided to focus on being the best I could possibly be in the little world that I had there. And I said, I might never get beyond playing for first graders and for, you know, playing at the county fairs in the country. But when those people come and see me, I want them to tell others that they saw the best ventriloquist they ever saw when they went to the fair this year, or they saw the best ventriloquist when they were in the first grade. And I did that for myself. And that's the key is, you know, if you start doing it and you for yourself and you never stop working, you never know what's going to happen, because no one was more shocked when the success came for me
I
was.
And Terry, you make a good point. And in my mind, if you keep doing what you love and you do it to keep improving, good things will happen. And that's a way of, in my mind, not giving up in a way. You didn't give up. You kept improving what you did, and look what happened. Fantastic success story.
Yeah, it's so true. And even if it doesn't happen for you, I promise you're going to be more fulfilled in your life, because you're going to know you're giving the best you have. So I tell people, listen, if you're a guitar player and you reach a certain age and you realize you're never going to be, you know, in the next Rolling Stones, or you're never going to have a hit record, and you put that guitar in the garage, or you put it in the closet, I promise you, you'll never have any kind of dreams come true with that. But if you pick it up every day, you pick on it a little bit, you work on it a little bit, you do some songs, you play for your church, you play for your, you know, for other organizations and stuff, you know, you can be really proud of yourself and what you're doing, that you are becoming as good as you are physically capable of at whatever it is that you love to do. And there's an enormous sense of satisfaction in that.
Yeah, you know, I was very blessed. My father always advised me that if you do what you love, you just can't go wrong, because your passion will come through. And as long as you have that, you're going to be happy. You spend so much of your life working that you might as well be working at something you love. And eventually, somehow, the money comes through, or the success at least is to a point where you're able to be happy and be able to survive. Now, did you get that message from your mom, or was it just innate with you? Because I know you said your dad wasn't super supportive as you were growing up. But
no, he wasn't at all. My mom, you know, my mom was very supportive of me, but it was not. It was really more of a way. I've always been kind of a rebellious spirit, and my father tried to crush me, and it was the rebel in me that just said, "No, I'm going to prove him wrong." He told me on a daily basis that I would fail, that I would never amount to anything, and that I would be a failure, and that I wasn't good at what I did, and I never would be. So that rebellious spirit in me just bucked it and said, I'm not going to let him determine. I'm going to prove to him. You know, he told me, I told him I wanted to learn how to yodel without moving my lips. And he told me it was physically impossible for anyone to learn how to yodel without moving their lips, and that if you couldn't yodel already, then you couldn't learn how to yodel. And I spent over a year and a half learning how to yodel by listening to a Roy Rogers tape. and I just started yodeling. I had one of my characters start yodeling. It's interesting, he never mentioned it. You know, he came and saw me and saw me do it. He never mentioned the fact that he told me I couldn't. So for me, it was more of a defiance. Mm-hmm. And some people get caught up in, you know, they actually allow those people, like my father, to crush them, and they take it to heart. And then others like myself who are, you know, I don't like being told what I can and can't do. And I mean what I'm physically capable of doing. You know, I'm that person that says, really, you don't think I can? Okay, I'll show you. You know, I'll prove it that I can. And that's really what I did. And then it came to a point when I had to deal with that. And then it wasn't about rebellion anymore. It was just about, man, you know, I just, for my own sake, I want to be the best. And the interesting thing was I was making a decent living. I was never going to get out of debt, and I was never going to get rich and famous. But I was making a living doing ventriloquism at these, you know, at the fairs and at the schools. So for me, once I finally realized that, you know, the dreams, maybe I was never going to get rich and famous, but I'm one of the lucky people in the world that really does get to do what I love and get paid for it. And I tell you, those last couple of years, I was so happy. I just was enjoying myself. And like you just said, if you get to do what you love for a living, man, you should count your blessings every single day, because not many people do. And that for me was the dream come true. And of course, man, all of a sudden, I mean, overnight, it was, my head swam, you know, it was nuts. I just, all of a sudden I went from a complete obscurity to rocketing to international stardom, becoming one of the top headliners in Las Vegas in the span of about 1 year. So it just makes me dizzy thinking about it.
Well, we are so glad that you didn't follow the way of your father, that you had some rebellion to you, and that you wanted to be the best, because your show, Country Christmas, we saw it opening night a week ago Monday, was absolutely fantastic. I told you after the show, the best show I've ever seen. You're the best entertainer I've ever seen. And I'll tell you why, Carrie. What's amazing to me is your ability to control your body language as you transfer the passion, the rhythm, and movement to the puppets while maintaining your part as the puppeteer. I don't know how you do that, because, you know, when people sing, and as well as you know, you sort of rock internally and externally, but you're able to maintain a neutral position and have the puppets do it. How do you do that?
You know, it's a matter of tens of thousands of hours of rehearsal practice, of learning how to do it. And, you know, I like to, when people ask me that exact question, I tell them it's very similar to a person who works at a assembly line in a factory. Do you remember the old I Love Lucy show where the chocolate was coming in and she couldn't do it? You know, how funny that was. Well, that's pretty much how anyone who starts on a job starts. At first, you know, you're overwhelmed. You don't know what you're doing, and you have to concentrate on everything. But after a while, after you do that day after day after day, you know, 8 hours a day, you know, you're going to get to a point where it just becomes automatic, and that's really what it is for me. It's gotten to a point now where I pick up a puppet and it's just automatic. The whole, you know, I'm able to make it come alive. But that was, you know, tens of thousands of hours of practice and rehearsal and concentration, and now I'm able to reap the benefits of having that kind of dedication and commitment.
You know, I know that you say that you have ADD, and I think you would have to in order to be able to flip from one voice and character to another while keeping the flow of the show going through to a single theme. Are you just completely worn out after the show?
Yes, I am. I am very much, very exhausted at the end of shows. I put so much of my heart and soul into every show. When I'm done, I'm pretty spent. My wife asked me to go to a concert the other night with her. She's my wife's Hawaiian, and it was a Hawaiian band playing. And I went, but boy, I don't like going places after shows because I'm just so exhausted. I'm so tired. But I made it through, and I actually had a beer and didn't fall asleep. So that was a good thing.
Well, Well, you know, also speaking of that, one of the things that really impressed me, I mean, you have reached such a level of a pinnacle of success, so to speak, where, you know, everybody knows your name. You've got your own theater. You've got this great show running in the Mirage now, going on your sixth year. But you're so down to earth. I mean, we just happened upon you out in the hallway after the show, just chatting, meeting and greeting, taking photos with everybody, and just so down to earth and friendly. I just think that's incredible. We've been to shows where, because we're with the media, we got in with the people of the VIP, you know, to go and have a meet and greet with the celebrity. This was so not that, where it's like, you know, go up, smile, take a picture, you're done. You are so approachable. Have you worked hard to maintain that with your success?
Well, you know, I didn't really have to work hard because I started as a janitor. Mm-hmm. My parents owned a janitorial business when I was a teenager, and I had to work in the janitorial business. So I would spend, you know, hours every day. You know, we used to get up at 5 a.m, go and clean, do some cleaning, and then we'd go to school. And afterwards, we would clean until about 10 o'clock at night. And that was our every single day. So I didn't want to be a janitor. That was not my goal in life, to continue the family janitorial business. So I would practice my ventriloquism while I was cleaning. So, you know, I've never left that janitor is still a part of me. And I realized that, you know, I've never really thought of myself as a remarkable person. I have talent that some people don't have. And I'm grateful for that, but I do not feel that I'm any more important than the person who cleans my dressing room or who cleans up the theater afterwards. You know, we're all incredibly important people to God, and I just, you know, I always have to remember that I was a janitor one time too, and there's nothing really great and special about me, and it makes me happy that people are thrilled to meet me. I don't get it, because I'm just me, you know, but
you're you and about 10 other puppets.
That's right.
But, you know, so it is funny. It always kind of makes me chuckle when somebody gets excited because they meet me, because, you know, I'm really not exciting, believe it or not. I'm just a really, you know, when I did the Ellen DeGeneres show, I said, just a normal guy. And she looks at me and goes, you are not a normal guy. But I mean, I realize I can do all these voices and I can do them without moving my lips. But really, I mean, I'm just as ordinary as anybody else. And any superstar really is. The only thing that makes them extraordinary may be a talent that they have and the fact that people recognize them and they see them on television or in movies. But when you really get down to it, they're exactly like you. We're all just human beings. You know, we're all just trying to be here. And hopefully I can make the world a better place. And if taking a picture with somebody makes them feel better and maybe makes them smile and makes them happy, then, geez, that's a small price to pay.
Yeah.
Make people happy.
And that's why you're special, too, I believe. You care about people. And we only have a few minutes left, and I did want to ask, do you have a favorite puppet that you are more attracted to that you use in your shows, that special puppet that you seem to have this connection with?
Yeah, I love all of my puppets because they really are extensions of myself. They are creations. You know, it's kind of like a painter. You know, a painter might love what they do, but they have a particular painting that is their favorite. And I have two. And the reason I have two is because one is hands down my favorite. And that's Winston. Because Winston, the impersonating turtle, won America's Got Talent. I have no delusions about this. You know, a turtle who sings like Roy Orbison, you know, was never heard of before Winston. And he truly captured the heart of America. And I know that. You know, I think people did see my down-to-earth availability and the fact that I was kind of one of them, and that was attractive to them. I think it was when Winston sang America's Got Talent that really got them to get to their phones and vote. And my sentimental favorite is Walter T. Airedale, the country puppet, because he was my first professional puppet. My mom knew from the time I was about 15 that I was going to be professional and I wanted to do this. So she actually started saving her money. We didn't have a lot of money, and the puppet was over $1,000. And she ordered a puppet and had him kind of put it in layaway. And she started sending him money. It took her 3 years to save the money to buy this puppet. And he's still in my show. So he will always kind of have that special place in my heart as my favorite. But Winston, of course, you know, is the one who brought all the success. So I kind of love them both equally.
That's wonderful. Of course, you are the voice of Winston, which I love. I have two quick things to touch upon. One is I absolutely love the way that you described your feeling when you were surrounded by the Muppets at the finale of season two of America's Got Talent. I just think that was wonderful, which got me interested in your writing ability. And you have a new book out, Lamu the Christmas Kitten.
I do. And you know, I had this idea. I had a cat that was like 17 or 18 when she passed away. And I was sitting there thinking, I had a glass of wine, and I was sitting out, and I was so sad because I was right there when they put her down because she got cancer, and she just couldn't go on anymore. So I actually watched her die, and I was just heartbroken. And she was such a great cat. You know, we all have our pets. You know how much we love our pets. And they're so perfect to us. And I'm sitting there thinking about her, and I thought, wow, you know, she was so good. She was the best cat. She's such a great cat. She could have been Jesus's cat. And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to immortalize her. I'm going to write a series of books about Lamu being Jesus' cat. Mm. So I've gotten three of the books written. Two of them are not yet published, but I'm working on getting them published, and they'll be on Amazon.com and iBooks hopefully soon. But one of them, Lamu the Christmas Kitten, is the story of the birth of Christ, mm-hmm. so we can remember why we celebrate Christmas to begin with. And you know, it's kind of a little drummer boy type story in that. There's a little girl who has this kitten, and she goes to visit Christ, the little Christ child, and she doesn't have anything to give him, so she gives him the kitten. And I don't want to give any secrets away because it has a really amazing – when she gives the kitten to Jesus, it has this amazing moment. But you know, the idea is I'm gonna tell the entire life of Christ, the Gospels, through the eyes of this cat that he had.
That's going to be so beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is beautiful, and it's wonderful. There's a real genuine, gentle spirit to the books. I feel like that they have this wonderful spiritual quality to them. When you read them, they just make you. They just fill you with this happiness and this feeling of goodness. You know, my purpose is to introduce the world to Christ and take away that whole that veil of that we can't know him personally. And that we can actually have a relationship with a person who was here, who also, you know, changed the world, you know, and I just feel like that he needs to be approachable. And that's really the purpose of writing these books, is to make Jesus Christ approachable to people.
Well, and I just read the book, and of course, I'm not the only one, but you have 5-star ratings so far from everyone on Amazon that's purchased the book and has read it, and of course, I purchased it and read it, and I just thought it was phenomenal, and I don't want to give anything away either, but it was just beautiful, the human aspect, but also when you're talking about how precious our pets are, it's the same thing. They're innocent. And in this case, I just love that bridge that you've made. It's just wonderful. So I'm excited about your book series.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the second one's great, and I love it. But the third one is the one that so I finished the third. I'm working on the fourth, and the third one. Oh my gosh! At the end, you'll be crying, and you'll be crying, and you will just feel it's you know it's hard to describe, but it makes you feel as you know we're all fallen, and we all know that we have our weaknesses, and by the end of that third book, you just realize that even with your weaknesses. You can approach Christ, and that's kind of why I'm doing it. So,
but your creativity just has no bounds.
Well, thank you.
Well, Terry, we so much appreciate that you coming on today, Terry Fader, and we want to remind all the listeners that now through December 25th, Country Christmas at the Mirage Hotel. Get down there and see you live and in person. Terry, you are remarkable. But you also perform throughout the year, going on your sixth year, as Tricia said, at the Mirage, and also evidently still tour the U.S. during the year. You're a busy guy.
I am. I'm a very busy guy. We're hopefully going to be going to England in this year. We're not sure if that's going to go through, but we're trying. But we do. Oh, I'm exhausted. But happily exhausted.
I hear you. And Terry Fader, thank you so much for being on Breakthrough Entertainment today, 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix. And we're going to go see you again because we just love you, love your show, everything about you. You're an inspiration. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. Thank you. Merry Christmas. And we'll be right back. Thank you again to Terry Fader at the Mirage Hotel. Great entertainer, great inspiration, and we'll be right back after these words on 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. Walking in a winter wonderland.